back in chapter 4, the sages of Namasharanya, wishing to hear after their first six questions were answered by Srila Sutta Goswami in the first three chapters, they posed further questions because they wanted to hear more Bhagavatam. So in the ninth verse of the fourth chapter, they say, Abhimanyu Sutam Sutta Prahur Bhagavatottamam Tasya Janma Mahascharyam Kamini Cha Grinitina. It is said that Maharaj Prickett is a great first-class devotee of the Lord, Bhagavatottama, and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him. He was a great emperor, and he possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. Who did he acquire his kingdom from? Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu family, which wasn't easy because the Pandava family was already completely full of prestige because it was Yudhisthira, Arjun, Bhim, Nakul, Sahadev. They were already the most powerful and famous personalities. But yet, Prickett Maharaj, he was increasing their prestige. But then, they ask, why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? How radical. People renounce things generally when they have nothing. Then it becomes easy to renounce. Or at the end of their life, when they have nothing left, no energy, then they will become holy and take to spiritual life. But who really possesses something in this world and then takes full renunciation, even fasting till death? This is very extreme. Extremely wonderful. So the sages ask these questions. Tell us about Maharaj Prickett's birth. Tell us about his activities. And tell us the circumstances that caused him, this great king who was so full of opulence, youth, everything, power. Now why in the world would such a person in such a position renounce everything and decide to fast until death, sitting down on the bank of the Ganga? So the chapters that we will now read of the Bhagavatam, beginning with 12, they will discuss this. Chapter 12 describes the birth of Maharaj Prickett and the predictions about his future, what type of a person he's going to be. And then we skip 14 and 15, we've just done those. And then 16 and 17 describe the activities of Maharaj Prickett. Very powerful, chivalrous. These are the activities that everyone is looking for in a leader. The perfect leader, Maharaj Prickett, the hero. And then in chapter 18 and 19, it will discuss the circumstances surrounding the amazing event where Maharaj Prickett left everything and became a renunciant and sat down on the bank of the Ganga and asked his famous and very important question, now I am about to die, what is my duty? What should I be doing? My time is, every second is bringing me 1 second closer to death, like an hourglass, like the sand going through the hourglass. Now what is my duty? I have only 7 days left to live. So this is how these topics will be covered directly in answering the questions of the sages of Namasharanya to Sutta Goswami. Now when they asked this, they had also asked some other questions as well. They asked about Srila Vyasadeva and they asked how Sukadeva Goswami met Maharaj Prickett, and they asked about Sukadeva, and these questions will be answered too in the course of time. But what had happened, in chapter, after these questions were asked, the story of how Vyasadeva came to write the Srimad Bhagavatam was explained, and that went to chapter 7. And then from chapter 7, the events leading to the birth of Maharaj Prickett began, because some history had to be related. So we heard how Arjuna had chased Asatthama with Krishna still driving his chariot. Arjuna chased this Asatthama. Why? Because this heinous person had killed the 5 sleeping grandsons of the Pandavas, thinking that he would please Duryodhana. But he did not please Duryodhana. They were not the Pandavas, or rather they were not the Pandavas, but the children of the Pandavas that he killed as they slept. And Arjuna was chasing him, and he finally brought him back with Krishna's help. And after deciding what to do with Aswatthama, killing him and not killing him, the Sutta continued to narrate how Krishna was about to leave, and then Uttara came rushing to Krishna, and she said, "Krishna, protect me, protect me. Aswatthama has thrown another brahmastra and is aimed at this unborn child within my womb. Protect him. Never mind me, protect him." So in the 8th chapter of this first canto, we heard how it looked from the outside, how Krishna actually protected the unborn child within the womb of Uttara by expanding himself, but we didn't really see that. But what we did hear described was how Krishna, with the Sudarshan Chakra, protected the Pandavas from that brahmastra of Asatthama. But in any case, Krishna did protect them. And then Krishna was about to leave, and Kunti Devi came and offered such sweet prayers, saying, "How is it possible you are the Supreme Lord, but how is it possible for persons like us to know you? Great paramhamsas know you." And ultimately she requested Krishna to break her affection for everything so that she could just simply focus her attention upon him, which actually happened at the end of her life. We just heard that yesterday. How after the departure of Lord Krishna, and after Yudhisthira and the Pandavas left for the north to end their stay on earth, Kunti Devi just simply focused her mind upon Krishna. After Kunti Devi recited her prayers, her heartfelt prayers to Krishna, then Yudhisthira came to Krishna in great distress. Why was Yudhisthira distressed? Because 650 million people had been killed to place him upon the throne. What a horrendous thought. And Krishna himself could not satisfy Yudhisthira's doubts that he had done the right thing. And Krishna brought him and the other Pandavas to dying Bhishma Dev, to glorify Bhishma Dev, that he could do Bhishma Dev, the Lord's devotee, could do even what Krishna couldn't do. And he also wanted to bring the Pandavas before Bhishma Dev, so Bhishma Dev could see them in their position as kings before he left the world. And he also wanted to be present directly in front of Bhishma's eyes when Bhishma was about to leave this world. So we heard the descriptions of Bhishma Dev, how he, in a very moving way, he told Yudhisthira that the fact that you have suffered so much, and the fact that so many people have been killed, this must be the inconceivable plan of the Lord. It has nothing to do with you. This is Krishna. Yada yada hidamasya glanir bhavati bharata. Then Bhishma Dev left this world in chapter 9. And then in chapter 10, Krishna again, he watched Yudhisthira. He helped establish Yudhisthira as the king, stayed for a few months. And in chapter 10, and at that time actually, just after some time of Yudhisthira's being the king, his Yudhisthira's wonderful reign was described in chapter 10, the beginning of that. And then after some time, not a great time, but after some time, Maharaj Prakrit was born, because he was within the womb of Uttara at that time, and Maharaj Prakrit was born. But it is not exactly mentioned there in chapter 10, because the story, the continuity of the story, would be lost. So he was born. And then Krishna, after helping to establish Yudhisthira and giving solace to Subhadra Devi, whose husband, was killed by, who knows some of the names of the warriors that took part in the killing of Abhimanyu? Karna, who else? Did Bhishma take part? No? Jayadratta? No, he was on the outside. He wasn't one. Drona, Kripacharja took part. Now, and others. And the heaviest, most powerful fighters on the whole battle, 10 of them, they all simultaneously attacked this one 16-year-old boy, Abhimanyu, who was such a powerful warrior. And they killed him after he put up such a tremendous fight. But he died. That was Subhadra's son, right? Yes, okay. Now I have it right. Subhadra Devi's son. So, and that was Uttara's husband. And Uttara had within her womb, the child Prakrit. But in any case, Krishna left. He left Hastinapur, and we heard the prayers offered and how touching it was when Krishna left, because these personalities of Hastinapur had been with Krishna for so long, and now he was leaving, and they were crying. They were lamenting and they were crying. But in Dwarka, which we see in chapter 11, when Krishna left Hastinapur, in Dwarka the people were ecstatic because Krishna was returning. He blew his conch shell and practically the whole city came out to greet him. And then we heard how one after another Krishna greeted and glanced upon the citizens and his friends and well-wishers, and he entered his mother's palace, and then finally he entered his own palaces and greeted his queens. And in very wonderful verses and purports, it is described the meeting between Krishna and his queens, explaining so wonderfully how Krishna had accepted the position of husband of these queens just simply in reciprocation with their specific desire to serve Krishna in a particular way. Their love for Krishna caused Krishna to reciprocate with them by becoming the perfect husband for them, the perfect kingly husband for them, because that was their desire. And then chapter 11 closes, and now chapter 12 begins, because the sages, they were so captivated with the story that Sutta was describing, the story of the wonderful pastimes of the Lord, that they did not say anything, even though these things, these topics, so many of them were only indirectly connected to their question, indirectly in the sense that they are leading to the birth of Maharaj Prakrit. So now, in chapter 12, they're again bringing their, by questioning, they're bringing the topics back to what happened with Maharaj Prakrit. So therefore they asked, the womb of Uttara in the first verse in chapter 12. The mother of Maharaj Prakrit was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Asatam. But Maharaj Prakrit was saved by the Supreme Lord. How is the great Emperor Prakrit, who is highly intelligent and a great devotee, how is he born in that womb? It was destroyed by the Brahmastra. How yet did he take his birth in the womb? And then, how did his death take place, and what did he achieve after death? So we'll read this purport. The king of Hastinapur, now Delhi, used to be the emperor of the world, at least till the time of the son of Emperor Prakrit. Maharaj Prakrit was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother, so he could certainly be saved from an untimely death due to the ill will of the son of a brahmana. Because just see the two questions they asked. They said, how, the sages asked, headed by Shonaka Rishi, that he was born within a womb that was destroyed by a brahmastra. How is that possible? Well, the answer, as we've already heard and we'll hear again, is that Krishna saved him. So Krishna is the protector of his devotee. So how is it then, when Krishna would protect this unborn child within the womb, then how is it possible that Krishna didn't protect him when he was cursed to die? So what caused him to simply go through with the curse? Krishna is the protector of his devotees, and specifically this devotee was such an exalted devotee that Krishna personally protected him. Then that protection just vanished or something. So quite mysterious. Because the age of Kali began to act just after the assumption of power by Maharaj Prakrit, the first sign of misgiving was exhibited in the cursing of such a greatly intelligent and devoted king as Maharaj Prakrit. The king is the protector of the helpless citizens, and their welfare, peace, and prosperity depend on him. This is very important. In quite a few chapters of the Bhagavatam, the ruling power of the kings is described. Here it is described, and especially again in the fourth canto when it describes Prithu Maharaj, the Adiraj, great king. Because although the Bhagavatam is mainly about the process of going back home, back to Godhead, and preparing us to fully take shelter of Krishna with great devotion, still these topics are very important, because without the proper ruling of the kingdom set in place, without that set in place, it is so hard to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Good government breeds good citizens with good consciousness. When the government is bad, the consciousness of the people becomes degraded. So therefore, Prabhupada spends so much time in the Bhagavatam glorifying and defining what is good government and explaining the process of what it means to rule and who should actually be qualified to rule the citizens. So the first sign of Kali was this cursing that Kali had entered, because Kali enters as soon as Krishna leaves the planet. The first sign is that, influenced by the age of Kali, this Brahmin boy, and we'll hear about that in the 18th chapter, he curses Maharaj Prickett. The king is the protector of the helpless citizens, and it is a fact that the citizens are basically helpless. They are ordinary people, and it's the government, the king's duty to protect them. From what? From everything unfavorable for their advancement, so that they can lead a simple, peaceful, prosperous life, and in that consciousness develop their God consciousness. If everyone is afraid all the time, if everyone is in debt all the time, and if everyone is diseased all the time, if everyone is greedy all the time, if everyone is lusty and dissatisfied all the time, what chance do the people have for Krishna consciousness to arise within their hearts? Their minds are so disturbed by everything. So the king is the protector of the helpless citizens, and their welfare, their peace and prosperity depend on him. Unfortunately, by the instigation of the fallen age of Kali, an unfortunate Brahmana's son was employed to condemn the innocent Maharaj Prickett, and so the king had to prepare himself for death within 7 days. Maharaj Prickett is especially famous as one who is protected by Vishnu. Does anyone know the name of Maharaj Prickett, which indicates that he is protected by Vishnu? Yes, Vishnu Ratta, and that name will come up in the verse. He is known as Vishnu Ratta, he who is protected by Vishnu. So he's especially famous as one who is protected by Vishnu, and when he was unduly cursed by the Brahmin's son, he could have invoked the mercy of the Lord to save him, but he did not want to, because he was a pure devotee. A pure devotee never asked the Lord for any undue favor. Maharaj Prickett knew the curse of the Brahmin's son upon him was unjustified, as everyone else knew, but he did not want to counteract it, because he knew also that the age of Kali had begun, and that the first symptom of the age, namely degradation of the highly talented Brahmana community, had also begun. He did not want to interfere with the current of the time, but he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and very properly. This is when one thinks about this consciousness, so surrendered to the will of Krishna, not going against the current, even slightly, of Krishna's desire, one can become so amazed. What tolerance! All the good qualities are present in this king, Maharaj Prickett, because devotion is so deeply present within his heart. He did not want to interfere with the current of the time, but he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and very properly. Being fortunate, he got at least 7 days to prepare himself to meet death. Now that is an interesting view of being fortunate. Who, if someone gets a notice, you're going to die within 7 days or a month or a year. So, oh, I'm so fortunate. How fixed one has to be to actually think like that. How fixed one has to be in truly realizing that one is not the body, but one is a soul, and this body is doomed, and I'm just going to go on to another body. How fixed. Not philosophically, not theoretically, I mean, not just something intellectually to preach to others about, but how fixed one truly has to be to meet such things, such a circumstance, cheerfully and properly. And Maharaj Prickett was like that, so we're getting glimpses of the exaltedness of his consciousness already. And so he properly utilized the time in the association of Shukadev Goswami, the great saint and devotee of the Lord. So they continued to ask, "We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Prickett, to whom Shukadev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. We'll read some of this purport as well. Sukadev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Prickett during the remaining 7 days of his life. And Maharaj Prickett heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited. Out of the 9 different transcendental means of devotional service to the Lord prescribed in the Bhagavatam, either all of them, or some of them, or even one of them, are equally beneficial if properly discharged. Maharaj Prickett and Sukadev Goswami were serious performers of the first 2 important items, namely the process of chanting and the process of hearing. And therefore, both of them were successful in their laudable attempt. Transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting and not otherwise. So very heavy statements. It was the serious hearing of Maharaj Prickett that made him successful. And the serious speaking of Bhagavad Katha by Sukadev Goswami that made him successful. Both were benefited. How wonderful is the transcendental process. Everyone who partakes is benefited. So they have asked, they have questioned and begged Sutta to please speak about Prickett Maharaj. We want to hear about him. So Sutta Goswami first begins to describe the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He says, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. Now as we hear the description, it isn't long, but as we hear the description of the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, just imagine 2 things. First, imagine what it would be like to be a citizen under such a king, how you would feel just about your life. And second, how would you feel about the king, who by his piety and strength was offering this to you? Maharaj Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. That means that there was nothing that he did that was selfish. Rather, he was fully generous. He was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. What made him like that? Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. So that means that as he was administrating the kingdom, doing all the things that are required to administrate a kingdom, he was continuously serving Krishna. We'll read a little of the purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew the science of Krishna very well. For it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to the Lord, he acquired the qualification of administering the state. I found that very interesting. That how did he become such an able and powerful administrator? He became qualified due to the devotional service that he was performing, and Krishna gave him the power to be the king. The father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the son, but that does not mean that the father has lost the qualification to be a father. A father is always a father because he always has the good of the son at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become a better man than himself. Just understand, this is the mood of the king. Therefore, a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially human beings who have better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna, so that everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens. For his personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. He conducted the administration on that. Because all his senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes the partial service to the living beings, who form the parts and parcels of the complete whole. Those who are busy rendering service to the parts and parcels, leaving aside the whole, only spoil time and energy, as one does when watering the leaves of a tree without watering the root. And Prabhupada concludes by saying, this is the way, that is the way of the perfect management of the state administration. Now, his kingdom was administered so well that even the news of his kingdom reached the celestial planets about his worldly, the heavenly planets about his worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. So although he was so opulent and so famous, due to his opulence, that even the denizens of the heavenly planets were aware of how wonderful his situation was, still he was not attached or attracted to that opulence. Why? Because he was satisfied in his service to Krishna. So one, and Prabhupada gives the example from the Bhagavatam 11th canto, that devotional service is truly like food. Tushti pushti chudapaya anugasan. That when one eats, one feels satisfied, one gets nourished, and one's hunger leaves him. So similarly, when one is fully engaged in devotional service, has developed some love for Krishna, then one has virakti, one has renounced from material things. One experiences the happiness. One is satisfied in his devotional service, and he experiences the happiness of his devotion, his love for Krishna being nourished. So, Prabhupada says in his wonderful way, the whole material world is full of hungry living beings. Now what is he saying? That everyone is hungry for satisfaction in this world. But no one is satisfied. The hunger is not for good food, shelter, or sense gratification. The hunger is for the spiritual atmosphere. And if that spiritual atmosphere is present, then automatically one feels satisfied. Due to ignorance only, people think that the world is dissatisfied because there is not sufficient food, shelter, defense, and objects of sense gratification. This is called illusion. How do we know that? How do we know that it is an illusory attempt to be happy by giving the people of the world those things? Certainly we all need those things. So Prabhupada explains, when the living being is hungry for spiritual satisfaction, he is misrepresented by material hunger. But the foolish leaders cannot see that even the people who are most sumptuously materially satisfied are still hungry. And what is their hunger? And what is their poverty? This hunger is actually for spiritual food, spiritual shelter, spiritual defense, and spiritual sense gratification. These can be obtained in the association of the Supreme Spirit, Lord Sri Krishna. And therefore, one who has them cannot be attracted by the so-called food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification of the material world, even if they are relished by the denizens of heaven. Very clear, very powerful. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was fixed, fully satisfied in the Lord's service, and therefore the kingdom did not interest him as a object of sense gratification and pleasure. Rather, he saw it as something that was his duty, his offering to Krishna to administer it. O son of Bhrigu, Shonaka, Sutta continues, when the child Pariket, so that's described in the kingdom and reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the great, when Maharaj Pariket, the child Pariket, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttar, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Asvatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Now we heard in the 8th chapter, the beginning of the 8th chapter, how Krishna had protected him. But wouldn't it be interesting to know what he saw? This child was within the womb of his mother. What did he see? Now, Sutta Goswami is going to reveal what this child in the form of an embryo actually saw while Krishna was protecting him, and it is wonderful. This is what he saw. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his cub constantly encircled him like a shooting star. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. And previously we heard the Brahmastra described as an invincible weapon, an unstoppable weapon. And it's being compared to what? A drop of dew. Just imagine how terrified you would feel if someone was going to attack you with a drop of dew. So when Krishna is protecting one, when his club is giving a devotee protection, even the most unstoppable, seemingly invincible weapon becomes compared to a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. Who is this? Just imagine. Who is this? The child thought. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions. That means that this personality is not only the protector of the righteous, and not only the super soul, but he's everywhere. So that means that if we become protected by him, there is nowhere that we will not be protected, even if we are in the womb. So he stretches in all directions, who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. That's Maharaj Prakrit. And there's a long purport where Prabhupada discusses the astrological influences. And there's an interesting, I'll just read, it's all very, very interesting. But there's one interesting sentence that I'll read, sentence or two, that the law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars, and a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of stress astronomical influences. A man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless. Maharaj Prakrit, or even the personality of Godhead, appear in certain constellations of good stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body thus born at an auspicious moment. How even the Lord is accepting the grace, practically the service of the planets as they give their favorable influences upon him. He's taking service from them and utilizing that. So the devotee, the exalted devotee like Maharaj Prakrit, it is not that he is under their power in one sense, but their power complements his mission and gives him the necessary influence. Their influence is exerted upon him to help him in his mission, like that. So he was born. Maharaj Prakrit took his birth at a very auspicious time. King Yudhisthira, who was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Prakrit, had the purificatory processes of birth performed. Learned brahmanas headed by Domya and Kripa recited auspicious hymns. Now, we mentioned before how Kripacharya took part in the killing of Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu was, what was his relationship to Maharaj Prakrit? He was his father. And here he was performing, taking part in the performing of the purificatory processes at the birth of Prakrit. Now this gives us some hint, and we're going to read some of the history of Kripacharya just to get a hint of the very subtle and glorious mentality of those in the Vedic culture. Kripacharya, this is describing about Kripacharya from the purport. Kripacharya is the son of the great Rishi Sadbhan and was born in the family of Gotam. The birth is said to be accidental. By chance, the great Rishi Sabdan met Janapadi, a famous society girl of heaven, and the Rishi Sabdan discharged semen in two parts. By one part, immediately a male child, and by the other part, a female child, were born as twins. The male child was later on known as Kripa, and the female child was known as Kripi. Maharaj Santanu, while engaged in chase in the jungle, picked up the children and brought them up to the brahminical status by the proper purificatory process. Kripacharya later became a great general like Dronacharya, and his sister was married to Dronacharya. Kripacharya later on took part in the Battle of Kurukshetra and joined the party of Duryodhana. Kripacharya, so he was on Duryodhana's side, and Kripacharya helped kill Abhimanyu, the father of Maharaj Prickett, but he was still held in high esteem by the family of the Pandavas due to his being as great a Brahmana as Dronacharya. How these people acted on principles. They molded their consciousness around religious principles. They were so pious. Because he was a qualified Brahmana, they gave him respect. When the Pandavas were sent to the forest, after being defeated in the gambling game with Dronacharya, with Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra entrusted the Pandavas to Kripacharya for guidance. After the end of the battle, Kripacharya again became a member of the Royal Assembly, and he was called during the birth of Maharaj Prickett for recitation of auspicious Vedic hymns to make the ceremony successful. Maharaj Yudhisthira, while quitting the palace for his great departure to the Himalayas, entrusted Kripacharya with Maharaj Prickett as his disciple. So Maharaj Yudhisthira placed Maharaj Prickett under the care of Kripacharya. How unenvious these personalities were. If someone does anything to us, we'll remember it for the rest of our life. That's envy. Because why? Because we don't see Krishna acting. And that's the key. So he entrusted Kripacharya with Maharaj Prickett as his disciple, and he left home satisfied because of Kripacharya's taking charge of Maharaj Prickett. This is wonderful. Their activities really displayed the wonders of their consciousness. 14. So we've heard how already in the later chapters 14 and 15 how Maharaj Yudhisthira retired. Upon the birth of his son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charities should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the Brahmins. The learned Brahmanas, who were very satisfied with the charity of the king, addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of descent from the Purus. The Brahmanas said, "This spotless son has been restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, in order to oblige you. He was saved when he was doomed to be destroyed by an irresistible supernatural weapon." Prabhupada explains in the last part of his purport, after describing the Brahmastra weapon in his purport, he explains in the last part, "The Brahmastra, which was thrown by Asatam at the child Parikit, was certainly supernaturally powerful, and nothing of the material world could resist its force of penetration. But the all-powerful Lord, who is present everywhere within and without, could counteract it by his all-powerful potency just to save a bona fide servant of the Lord and descendant of another devotee, Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was always obliged by the Lord by his causeless mercy." That means that the Lord is obliged to, out of his own mercy, it's not force, it's out of affection, he's obliged to care for his devotee who's given up everything for his service. Very wonderful. "For this reason," and in this verse, the word he is called Mahabhagavato Mahan. And the word Vishnurata. Tasman namna Vishnurata. That his name, he will be known as Vishnurata. Because he has been protected by the Lord, he will be known by that name. What a glorious name. The one who is protected by the Lord, the womb. For this reason, this child will be known in the world as one who is protected by this personality of Godhead, Vishnurata. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. So the first thing the Brahmins tell, because naturally when the child is born, the parents and the forefathers, they want to know, well, what's he going to be like? Is he going to be very qualified? What's he going to be like? So the first thing the Brahmins do, they describe his exalted devotional qualities. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that it was clear that he would be a great devotee. Why? Because he's already been protected by Krishna, and Krishna protects his devotees. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayadate suchapyaham. That for everyone else, samoham savabhuteshu name dveshastina priya. I am equal to everyone. But when Krishna protects someone, that does not show equality, it shows partiality. So Krishna is partial to his devotees. So the fact that Krishna protected Maharaj Prickett within the womb shows that already he's a great devotee. So therefore, they're very confident to say, because he's protected, there's no doubt this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. Krishna has already demonstrated his love for this boy. So next, which will tomorrow, we'll hear how Maharaj Yudhisthira asks, because he's heard about the devotional qualities of the Lord, now of Prickett Maharaj. Now he's going to ask the Brahmins to speak about his, not devotional qualities, but his kingly qualities. And again, tomorrow we'll hear what a king is supposed to be, what a ruler is supposed to be, and how we all truly long for such heroes. It is just natural for the living entity in this world to long for such heroic personalities, our heroes, because everyone wants heroes, and if we don't have such auspicious persons, kings who are the natural heroes, we find some lower class people from the category of rock and roll stars, movie stars, and sports figures as heroes. But listen, compare them, these quality of people, to someone like Parikshit Maharaj is going to be, which we'll hear about tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments?
Exactly like his
father. Pandu. Because then later on it mentioned he'll be exactly like Pandu. Yeah, his father was Pandu. So it, so you're saying which one is he talking about? I thought it was Pandu, because later on there's another reference to Prickett Maharaj like that, but certainly Yamaraj is like that as well. It's interesting to note, because Dhammaraj is the father. Yeah, and Vidura was so fatherly to them.
Also, another thing I noted was how the birth time was taken, suppose, from the time that the umbilical cord was cut.
Yeah.
Not from the time of actually entering into the world, coming out of the womb, because until the umbilical cord was cut.
How long is that after the child comes out? I mean, they don't keep it for like weeks or months or anything. You know better than me? What can I say? Half hour? That long?
You know, it's not.
It's fast, though, right?
It's not the first. It's simultaneous.
Yeah.
So it would definitely alter a horoscope.
Yeah. But probably, in any case, at least in some of our cases, it will still be a horoscope. No matter how much it's altered. Any other question? By Sukadev Goswami, even Vyasadev and Narada Muni, two previous speakers of the Bhagavatam, were there listening. Because of the quality of the speaker. They wanted to hear more and relish it. Any other questions? Yeah.
I was wondering in the purport to text 4. And then he says, you know, that statement about the father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the son.
Yeah. The relevance is that sometimes the king has to be strong with the citizens. And the citizens may sometimes cry. But when they're being punished, it is not that there is any harm intended to them. He's only thinking about their good, so it's in relevance to his ability and his ability and what he had to do as the king. Which verse is that? Yeah. 4. So he's talking, the sentence before that is, Maharaj Yudhisthira knew the science of Krishna very well. And for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of the science or by continuous devotional service, he acquired the qualification for administering the state. So you could put in the sentence, he's saying that an administration of the state meant that he had to punish people, the citizens, when they acted improperly to maintain the laws. So even in that punishment, which superficially seems to be making the child cry, the only thought is for his welfare. So even his punishments, they didn't have any vindictiveness attached to them. And there was nothing at all like selfishness or sense gratification or vindictiveness. He was only administering for the good of others. That's obvious.
Prabhupada says that the father wants everyone, the sons, to become a better man than even himself.
Yeah.
So it seems like only a devotee could administrate with that quality, wanting those under him to actually be superior to himself.
How unenvious one has to be.
And
in modern parlance, you really have to already be feeling good about yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
First question.
Yes.
When Uttara was Aswatthama was sent this Brahmastra, you seem to indicate that Uttara was armed by this Brahmastra.
Uttara?
Yeah. Was she armed by
it? Harmed.
Yes.
No. No, but the child was in the womb, and it actually describes that the child's body was destroyed, but Krishna gave him a new body. But that's described in the third canto. So in one sense, yes, but in another sense, it was just protected, also.
And the second point, you mentioned that you elaborated actually on the creeper chariot's position. Now he was unable.
How he was what?
The rest of the Pandavas were unenvious of him to such an extent that they allowed him to actually
and were happy and satisfied that he was doing it. Right. Amazing, yeah. Yeah.
But you mentioned now, in modern circumstances, most of us are too envious to forgive others. But even if we forgive others, there's a point of whether it's naive to actually let them be back in position, just like Aswatthama here.